Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:26 p.m. and that is April 5th. But I thought I'd kick off with the 10-year yield. It's down to 3.3%, and I think what we're seeing right here is just a little bit of reticence to bet too highly on the potential that yields are going to contract further when at the short end of the curve, the market is still willing to price in the potential that we're going to have just one more rate hike. So the 3-year, 3-month yield was up today by about 6 basis points. But what that basically means is, again, another divergence that we're seeing in the various yield curves. So when we look at the 10-year minus the 2-year, well, it's now at negative 48 basis points. So it's becoming less inverted. And it's been ranging for the last 3 or 4 weeks, but it's certainly moved higher. But then when we look at the 10-year minus the 3-month, we're getting exactly the opposite phenomenon, where it's actually at a new low. So this also is what we saw at the peak for this spread back in about a year ago, right around the end of the second quarter in 22. The 2-year had been more sensitive. So what we'd seen was that the 10-year minus the 2-year had peaked way early and was already well on the way down before the 3-month started to price in the potential for interest rate hikes. And now, I think it is important to just look at that 2-year, because it is a pretty good indicator of where interest rate policy is likely to go. And it has contracted from 5% to about 4%. It was well off the low in here today, though. So that's suggesting that there's potentially one more interest rate hike in the system, but that investors aren't really willing to bet that there'll be many more than that. Now, this is all happening against a background where we've seen a significant contraction in the health of the services sector. Services employment was down, and new orders were down, and prices paid were down. Now, they're all still above 50, so that's still expansion. But there's been a meaningful contraction. And I think then we can also look at the fact that the employment change was meaningful, that there were fewer people were added to the number of people that are working. So that is on top of the fact that yesterday the number of job openings was also significantly lower. Now, when we think then about what that means for the stock market, well, I think it's pretty clear that if we're coming to the end of the interest rate hiking cycle, it's generally because the Federal Reserve is worried that they've probably gone too far. And the S&P 500 was down today, but off the low. So even though we saw the yield contracting, it finished off the low, and therefore that also helped to support the S&P. Now, when we look at what generally happens in terms of the lead indicator for the yield curve spread, it's as the yield curve spread continues to contract, then that's generally not when you see panic in the stock market. It is usually when you get the first interest rate cut, because that is in direct response to observable weakness in the economy. And we're just not at that point yet. But the NASDAQ is more sensitive, not least because it's trading at a higher valuation. So it was down about 130 points today, but that was also off the low. So we might see some steadier action over the next few days. But I continue to believe that it is more likely than not that the lagged effect of all these interest rate hikes over the course of the last year have not yet been fully experienced. Now, when we think about what does that mean, well, we continue to see weakness in the banking sector. So The regional banks index was at a new closing low for the week, and it was off its low by the end of the day. But this is still really weak action. And I think it's especially interesting that we can look at the robust defense that Charles Schwab made of their banking and highlighting how large their deposits were, how low their leverage is, and yet the share has not rebounded. And it is now dropping back down to test the low. Now, it might yet rebound, and there might certainly be the potential that Charles Schwab is going to come out of this crisis in much stronger fashion. Of course, that's also assuming that all those loans that they made backed by technology share portfolios are going to make good on their margin calls. And a lot of those highly appreciated shares that people used to buy everything from houses to luxury cars to yachts and second homes, well, all of those, and art for that matter, those are now worth less. So there's going to be margin calls for a lot of the people that were borrowing money on that basis. And Charles Schwab was a significant provider of that kind of service. What I find especially interesting is when we look at another broker, but a broker that doesn't really offer those kinds of lending services. Well, Interactive Brokers had that big downside weekly queue reversal around the same time as the banks, and it's down again this week. But then it's certainly outperforming. Now, there's obviously the potential here that with the size of that downside key and the modest rebound so far, that the potential is that Interactive Brokers will have a failed upside break and then drop down through that $75 level. But it is certainly offering a lot of relative strength right now. Now, one of the other better performers in the asset management sector was T. Rowe Price all the way up to the peak in 21, and then it has also collapsed, but way earlier. So this is obviously then representative of an acute exposure to those technology type companies. I think there's one stock more than others really helps to I think paint a picture of the investor psychology we've had over the last decade. That's American Tower. So it's an asset-backed company. They own the cell towers for a big swathe of the US cell and mobile phone network. And that means that it's cash generative, and the share did really nothing but trend higher from the acute lows posted in 2002. And it's been, I think, undoubtedly among the best performing shares over the course of the last 20 years. Now, it had a meaningful pause in 2008, where it peaked at around 47 and then it bottomed less than 20. And now we're seeing another significant loss of uptrend momentum. Now, that's what it looks like on a log scale. Now, let's look at it on an arithmetic scale. We've had a very meaningful loss of momentum. And for the first time in a decade, the 200-day moving average is below the 1,000-day moving average. Now, the challenge here is that those cash flows are have long duration, and it's not like anyone's about to stop using their mobile phone. But it's trading on a price to book of 17 and a price to sales of 8. So then when we think about the dividend, well, it was an outsized dividend for a long time, and the yield was impressive. And now they've had to really fork out more money to try and support that dividend and make the investment case for owning the share more attractive. So the dividend has increased meaningfully over the last 3 years. But Of course, the big question then is about interest rates. And the loss of momentum we've seen has really started in 2021 and then picked up pace in 22. So this helps to illustrate what highly appreciated assets mean. That even though this isn't a company with a profound amount of debt, and their bonds at the moment are trading, the 2024 bond is trading at almost exactly 5% on the yield, and that's a bullet bond. But what it definitely helps to highlight is that there was incredible competition for cash flow in the last 15 years, that we had this phenomenal liquidity-fueled environment, and it hugely inflated the value of reliable cash flows. Then most particularly those that were reasonably alternative, like American Tower, and then also long duration. And not a lot of additional infrastructure had to be built. It had already been built. And then it was one of, by far, one of the best performing shares throughout the bull market. And now, with rising interest rates, with inflationary pressures, the competition that those types of cash flows are receiving from the broad sovereign market and for money markets is much more intense. And that's what's contributing to the underperformance. The business model of the company hasn't changed. And the risk that's attached to the business has not really changed. But what has changed is the relative value of those cash flows. And I think this is the big event that's occurred over the last year. And some of these companies are still trading on very rich valuations. So in the event that inflation does not come back down, then it's exactly these kinds of highly appreciated assets are going to feel some of the most pain. And that is why the share is down from 300 to 200 over the course of the last 2 years. Now, if we see bond yields contracting and deflationary forces taking over and more liquidity being provided, then there is the clear potential that assets like this will appreciate in value. But I think it is more likely that following that, what we are going to see is a narrower swing of the economic pendulum. We had a massive swing of deflation in the aftermath of the pandemic and the response to it. Then, because of that was such a deflationary shock, we had a massive swing in the opposite direction because of the volume of money printed that created inflationary pressures, and now the pendulum is swinging back in the other direction. I don't believe we're going to have the same volume of money printed on the next occasion. I don't believe that interest rates are going all the way back down to zero. So that would suggest then that if that's the correct conclusion, that we're going to see narrower swings, a lower amplitude of swings, and eventually settling back into an equilibrium, probably over the course of several years, then we can I think presume that there are going to be some exceptionally volatile environments in these types of highly appreciated assets. Then I think it's just worth considering that when we think about Verizon, well, they trade on a price to book of 1.8, and there's a price to sales of 1.2, and their cash dividend cover is 2. So they're not short, of cash, and the share has collapsed over the course of the last 2 years, and there hasn't been the same kind of asset price appreciation. In fact, the price of the share has been mostly ranging for the last decade, and it's really dipping down now into the previous base formation. So We have a higher reaction low, and it is unwinding the oversold condition relative to the 200-day moving average. But people aren't going to stop using their phones. Now, are they going to experience some competition from lower priced competitors? I think that it is quite likely that's going to occur, but it's yielding 6.5%. So we've had a meaningful contraction, and now we're starting to see some evidence of demand coming back in. And we're not talking about an expensive share. It has a PE of about 8. And then I think it's also worth highlighting other companies that are in that same PE ratio band. So Bristol Myers Squibb has a PE of 8 and a yield of about 3.25. And it's obviously one of the leading biotechnology companies. But I think for perspective, we have to get a lot of back history. And when we look at it over the course of the last 20 years, I think we're given another object lesson, because the big bubble in the 1990s was regarded as the TMT bubble. So it was technology, media, and telecommunications. But it was also biotech, and there was incredible promise in the 1990s about the potential for personalized medicine. And even though we didn't have the sequencing of the genome occur until after the bubble popped, there was an enormous willingness to price in the potential of genetic solutions. Well, we have to fast forward 20 years before some of those promises were commercialized in the rapid production of vaccines for the pandemic. Now, I know that there's going to be a lot of argument about whether those vaccines were necessary, whether how efficacious they were, and all of that. But that does not get around the reality that they were created in an exceptionally short period of time, and that we have immuno-oncology solutions that are real today, where there are customized pieces of solution being provided to patients which are solving blood cancers. Now, it's a lot harder to do that for solid cancers, but for blood cancers like leukemia, then the mortality rate has contracted materially. And then for some of the most dangerous forms of breast cancer, it's now possible to also create these customized solutions. And now, in fact, the survival rates from some of those has improved materially. So some of the promises that were made in the 1990s are beginning to reach commercial reality today. And all of the valuation has been squeezed out of some of the main competitors back in the 90s. And Bristol Myers Squibb basically bought a lot of the companies that went bust. And it's now right in the region of the upper side of this exceptionally lengthy range. So we're not talking about an expensive share. Now, we are obviously still in a difficult environment where liquidity is contracting, and there is the very real possibility of a recession at some point over the next 12 months. But with that pendulum effect, where we know that a lot of liquidity has been siphoned out of the market, and we know that there are about $5 trillion dollars sitting in money market funds. Well, not only is that siphoning money out of markets, it's also fuel for a new big bull market. And obviously that money is chasing the yields that are available in money market funds right now. And given a year that we had like 2022, where people lost money on both their bonds and their equities, then the promise of making close to 5% rather than losing 30. That's obviously more attractive to a lot of people, and particularly when we have all of this stress within the banking sector. Now, I think it's important to just to remember that there is a Wall Street leash effect, and when the USA is underperforming and the dollar is under stress, then it puts pressure on other markets. And the Thai market is rolling over right now. This looks like a type 3 top formation, and it is pulling back from the region of the 200-day and the 1,000-day moving average. At the other end of the scale, the Indian market is steadying, and it has pushed up through the 200-day moving average. And so far, this has been a pretty orderly consolidation in the region of the all-time peaks. And the Singaporean market has rebounded impressively, very similarly to how we've seen a rebound in European markets. Now, it has been ranging for 12 years. So, in order for, I think, enthusiasm to really jump about Singapore's potential, it's going to have to at least sustain a move up through the 3,500 level. Now, if you can do that, well, then I think we're definitely back in a secular bull market environment. And Singapore is certainly a beneficiary of sitting in between India and China and offering a lot of asset management and wealth management services. The A share market in China was also in positive territory today. But again, this is another index that has really gone nowhere for about 8 years. So it's certainly steady, and the banking sector is also steady. Now, one thing that I think is a big question, and it's this question about currencies. So when we look at the US dollar versus just about all the other major currencies, well, the Hungarian forint and the Mexican peso are up 8 and 6% respectively versus the dollar this year. And the Argentine peso is down 16%. Well, the reality is that no country wants a strong currency, but some currencies need a weaker currency more than others. So we've had a meaningful jump in the Brazilian real, the Mexican peso, and the euro, and the pound, and the Swiss franc. But a lot of those countries are not particularly thrilled at the idea of having a stronger currency. So then, if the dollar looks like it's going to contract, well, then what's it going to contract against most? It has encountered resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, it was a little bit in positive territory today, and there's the potential that it might pause because it's a little oversold in the short term. But I think that the more likely scenario here is that it's going to trend lower over time. But that also implies that other currencies will have to trend higher relative to it. And I guess the biggest candidates are the euro, the yen, and the renminbi. So if the euro is going to trend higher against the dollar, then they're going to have to first come up with a growth strategy for the domestic economy. And there'll have to be a lot of money spent on rebuilding, and that will have to be into productive assets. Well, if they can achieve that, the euro should appreciate. And if we have a new global growth cycle where a lot of the technology that has been developed in Europe is built elsewhere, then that should also be a significant benefit. So the euro could at least rebound and unwind a lot of this massive underperformance that it's put in since 2008. And if it goes back up to the peaks in 2008, then that would be viewed as a phenomenal bull market over the course of the next 7 or 8 years. And it would very much be tied to a revitalization of the European project. There might be a significant rebound in investment in Eastern Europe, for example. And then that would open up a lot of cheaper labor, and it would create or revitalize the demographics of the European region potentially. So that's, I guess, the aftermath of the war in Ukraine, and the rebuilding effort could be a big economic boom, and it might create demand for the euro. Now, let's think about the yen. The Nikkei today was down in a fairly dynamic manner, and the yen strengthened, and it is now. The dollar is encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average, so there is the scope here that the yen can appreciate further. Simply by not raising interest rates at all, then the yen benefits when other currencies are stopping raising theirs. So there is the potential, at least, that the yen can do better here. And of course, that is also on the assumption that global growth improves, and that Japan will be a major beneficiary of that. Now, I hesitate to think that the renminbi is going to become a lot stronger, but it has strengthened up from the lower side of this range, and it's stable here around the region of the 200-day moving average. There is certainly a competitive environment going on between the US dollar and the renminbi, so it perhaps is more instructive to look at it versus the euro. And versus the euro, we have a much steadier environment overall. But the euro is appreciating versus the renminbi, which is not great news for European competitiveness in China. Now, when we think then about gold, well, the price popped up to $2,000 and more yesterday, and it paused a little in here today. Now, we do have a short-term overbought condition, and we could yet have some additional consolidation. But I wanted to have a position because I'm aware that when gold begins to move, it can move very quickly. I hate paying up for commodities, so I'm viewing this as an initial position. My silver position is a smaller position again because it's even more overbought in the short term, and silver was in mildly negative territory for a good part of today. But it has broken the medium-term sequence of lower rally highs. So there is the potential that we get some consolidation. And if we get consolidation, I'll be willing to buy more. On the other hand, I think if it continues higher and pulls back into that 25,000, excuse me, $25 level, then I think that would also offer an additional entry opportunity. But what the interest in precious metals is beginning to highlight, and I think this was one of the other important factors today, is that in the most liquid options, for a good part of today, it was GLD. Then we had some interest coming back into companies like the S&P 500 because it rebounded. But we are definitely seeing interest beginning to be revitalized in the gold sector. And you can see that the GLD ETF was among the most actively traded call options in here today. And in early trading today, it was the most actively traded. So then when we think about gold shares, well, they have also begun to rebound, and we have had a material rally over the course of the last couple of weeks. It has also broken up to a new recovery high, and it's trading back above the psychological 30 level. Now, I've been of the view that I was willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, even though it dipped back down into that underlying base formation, but Gold shares have lagged by a wide margin. And the reason for that is because of higher energy prices and higher wages. Well, there's not much you can do about wages, but at least they can benefit from any kind of fall in energy prices. And the challenge in the short term is that oil prices rebounded back to test the $85 level and are now pausing in the region of this 200-day moving average. Now, there's a battle going on here between supply and demand. And OPEC is restricting supply, and Saudi Arabia is raising prices to its customers in Asia. And at the same time, the global economy is slowing down. The IMF is warning that global growth could fall below 2% this year. And that's pretty much the definition of a global recession. So that's not great news for demand growth in the energy sector. And OPEC Plus are very eager to sustain prices. So they will voluntarily cut in advance of a recession in order to try and forestall the risk that we'll have a repeat of what happened in 2020 when prices collapsed, dropping from about $70 to less than $20 in the space of only about 4 months. And that put national budgets under exceptional stress in most of the OPEC countries. So they are very keen on creating a higher for longer environment. And one thing that I think is especially interesting is that not only oil and gold and silver or the precious metals are firming, but that a significant number of the soft commodities are also pushing on the upside here at really just the beginning of a weaker dollar environment. And this is not only because of currency, it's also because of weather. So the Robusta coffee price has firmed meaningfully. It's bounced from both the region of the 1,000 and 200-day moving averages. And this is now pushing up out of a lengthy range. The number of times that Robusta has traded above the $2,200 area is really rather narrow. And there's the potential here that it could push out to new highs. And that is also dragging Arabica coffee higher as well. And that was up in a fairly dynamic manner in here today. So Arabica has been more locked in a range. If it follows through on the upside tomorrow, then that's going to confirm a return to a more bullish environment. Now, less export capacity for sugar in India is contributing to sugar prices popping on the upside. So this is a new recovery high. We haven't seen prices like this in a decade. And it's a really material breakout. So there's certainly evidence of demand coming through in a host of commodities. And this is London traded cocoa. So that is popping on the upside here, and that is despite the fact it is actually denominated in pounds, which and the pound has been pretty strong. If we look at it, the US contract, then we have a broadly similar pattern, and it is firming at the upper side of this range that's been forming for the last 6 years. So we certainly have evidence that the agricultural commodities are doing better. And this also helps to highlight that we're not out of the woods just yet in terms of the inflationary pressures. And with the clear potential for slowing growth, we have to, I think, there's been a lot of talk about stagflation, but this really does highlight the potential that stagflation is a very clear and present risk. And this, I think, is going to factor through into some of the decisions that are made about interest rates and company valuations. So, I think there is obviously the potential that stock markets are going to be under pressure over the course of the next few months. And it's really only a matter of time before bond yields really roll over. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.